today as we come to the table.
The point is, if you find yourself in a situation where the boss asks you, hey, do you know anything about this? And you know something about it and it's wrong, you need to tell them. But I may lose my job. Do you trust God or not? Do you trust God or not? Because if your boss finds out later you knew and you didn't tell him, you'll most certainly get fired. So the principle is just do what's right and face the consequences. God will work out the details. If she had done that, it probably would have spared her life. But instead, now they come up and they literally burn her and her family to death. And because it's so extreme and so radical, again, we're going to see that Samson does something very extreme and radical back for what they've done.
You know it well. Whether it's from a video you've watched or it was your own child, the moment you catch her with chocolate on her face, even though she didn't eat that last donut. No, Daddy, I didn't eat it. It must have been Rover. Dad smirks and tries to keep his cool, knowing his little one is lying right to his face. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Mark Kirk, Senior Pastor of Calvary Knoxville. In today's message, Pastor Mark encourages us to be honest about things we know to be true, even if there are consequences. It's better to be truth tellers and allow God to handle the rest. Otherwise, we'll be the toddler lying about chocolate on our face, digging deeper and deeper holes for ourselves. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Judges, chapter 15, with today's edition of Come to the Table.
Whatever your passion is, channel it in the right direction and use it for the Lord. I love to hear the testimony. Pastor Chuck, listen, some pastors used to do this, and I know pastors that do it. They'll move pastors every so many years, and they'll get like a filing cabinet of like maybe 2 to 3 years worth of sermons. And no joke, they'll go to the new church, and they'll start with sermon one. And they'll teach all those sermons. I don't know what they're studying through the week, but again, either way, they teach those same sermons as they go to church, whatever. And then when they run out, it's like, well, I guess it's time to move on to a new church. I'm out of sermons. And so they'll get moved and go to a new church, and whatever happens, happens. Pastor Chuck was doing that in his early years, before Calvary Chapel started. He said he had about 2 years worth of sermons, and he would go to a new place, and he would teach those 2 years of sermons in the denomination he was in, and then he would look to move somewhere else because he was out of sermons. Now, certainly he could have studied for more, but he had these, he liked them, they were packaged, ready to go, and it was real convenient and easy. He said the problem was he got to one place in California where the surfing was amazing. He said the surfing was great. He said, I didn't want to leave because the surfing was so good. Now, he said, I love the people and I love God, but if I can surf here, wouldn't that be great? Because the surfing is the best here, and he loved to surf. So he said he got this thing in his heart. We said, you know what? He read in this book, the Halley's Bible Commentary. He read in there, we said, you know what? The greatest thing you could do for your people is take them through all of the Bible, line by line, verse by verse. And so he said, wow, what a great idea. If I go through the whole Bible line by line, verse by verse, 2 years, this is like 8, 9, 10 years. This is great. Surf's up, right? And so what he did, he started teaching line by line, verse by verse through the whole Bible so he could surf longer. And then he began to see God pour his spirit out in amazing ways, honoring the line-by-line teaching of the Word of God. And the Calvary Chapel movement began, and it's where we are today. Guys, look how God used the passion of a man to surf to start a worldwide movement for God. So what I'm saying is this. You may have a passion. Maybe it's making movies. Maybe it's whatever your passion is. Ask God, how can I use this passion for you? I remember someone meeting with me not too long ago and saying, I really love to do this. Should I stop doing that and become a pastor? And I was like, well, if you're called to be a pastor, be a pastor. But don't just decide you're going to be a pastor because you want to do something for God if that's not where your passion or your call is. If your passion and your call is here, do that and serve God there. You can minister and be a pastor for God without the definition of a pastor right there. And every one of you guys have a passion. I don't know what your passion is. Start using your passion for God. And watch what God does with it. Who knows what God will do with it? Samson sadly, had passions that were fleshly, and he caused all kinds of problems for him. But God still took Samson's passions and used him as a judge and a leader for the nation of Israel that ended up setting the enemy's fields on fire and started a process where the nation was delivered from the oppression of the Philistines. And so Samson says, all right, this time I'm justified before God. Well, look what he says, verse 4. Then Samson went out and caught 300 foxes. He took torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and put a torch between each pair of the tails. Can you imagine those poor foxes? And when he had set the torches on fire, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up both shocks and standing grain, as well as the vineyards and the olive groves. I'll bet, you know, you talk about lighting a fire under somebody, these poor foxes, you light the fire and boom, they run in panic through all these fields, burning down groves, vineyards, grain, everything, doing massive destruction. And this was the time of the harvest. This was all their crops, their finances, their food. I mean, he did great damage on this. Now, again, what's amazing to me to think about here is that Samson, the word here is they trapped or caught these foxes. It means that he trapped these 300 foxes. How long would it take to trap 300 foxes? I think we tend to think of this story as Samson ran out the next day, trapped 300 foxes, and the next night let them all go. Probably this happened over weeks. Samson going out, trapping foxes, two at a time, let them go in somebody's field, catching two more, letting them go in their olive grove, catching two more, letting them go here. It doesn't tell us how he did it. Maybe he waited until he had all 300. I don't know. That would have been harder to manage. But can you imagine with one trap catching all these foxes? They didn't have any kind of mass trapping system that I know of for foxes in that day. You know, I was down here on the property the other day, a couple of weeks ago, and I found a trap down there, and somebody trapped a raccoon in there. And the raccoon was already dead, so I couldn't set him free or whatever, this kind of thing. But the bottom line is, I thought, you know, when I was studying for this, I looked ahead and thinking about this, I'm thinking, can you imagine catching 300 raccoons, how long that would take? Of course, you'd have to have a real abundance of raccoons, but still, catching that many raccoons, and he had to catch all these foxes and then release them at the proper time, and I can't imagine how long it must have taken him to do this, much less to have all the way to store them. So I think he probably caught them and did these things a step at a time. Probably the papers are saying in the Philistine times, fields burned up last night, you know, foxes seen running with flames between them. I don't know. You know, again, the fox fire burner strikes again or whatever, and he's burning up all these things all around there, and this is all happening. Now, this is interesting because we went to, our last trip to Israel, we went to Samson's hometown, the Valley of Sorek. But either way, we're there doing this Bible study. We're studying Samson and looking at the chapters through the Bible of Samson. We talked about the foxes, all that. And we get in the bus, no kidding, we're leaving this area where Samson grew up. And guess what goes running by the bus? A fox, this wild fox. And I remember seeing the thing that stuck out in everyone's mind. And I know what caught my attention was the tail on that. It's like this big, long tail. Now, I don't know if the tails are normally that long on the foxes here. I'm trying to remember. I see foxes here, but they seem to be fluffier or something. I don't know. But this guy had this big long tail, and I'm thinking, you know what? Not only could he tie their tails together, you could wrap your children up in that. You could, like, you know, hold them for a while. So whether he literally tied the tails together, I don't know, very possible. Or whether he tied a rope to each tail and simply tied torches in the middle, that's possible. But I find it interesting that he got 300 foxes. Why do I find that interesting? No doubt Samson, as this new judge, knew about Gideon, the other judge who had fought the Midianites. You remember the story. He got 300 men, and they all got torches. And with those 300 men and torches, they defeated the Midianites. And Samson's probably thinking, God, you did it with 300 men. There's only me. I'm the only one making a stand. But I'll get 300 foxes, and I'll tie a torch between them, and I'll release them, God, in faith, just like you did for Gideon. It doesn't say that, but again, because of the actual number and the way he did it, it would certainly appear he was making a statement. And maybe trying to put fear in the heart of the Philistines by sending these 300 foxes in there and burning everything up with these torches and wreaking all this havoc and all this. But again, just amazing to think about this story. And of course, I think about the poor foxes and, you know, trying to get apart, you know, and the panic they would have had, the devastation it would have done. But either way, it was a very effective way to burn their fields down. Now, again, remember, Samson also, I think, was probably taking a strike at their God. Why do I say that? Because, see, the primary god for the Philistines was a god by the name of Dagon. And Dagon comes from two words. The word dag or dag means fish, and they were immigrants. Literally, Philistines means immigrants. And they were immigrants from the ocean. They'd come in from the ocean, and no doubt they worshiped the god of the seas. And so they had dag, this fish god, if you will. Dagon or Dagain means grain. So they had this half man, half fish is what Dagon looked like. But he was a god of the sea, a god of fish, if you will, and a god of grain. Now, there's no fish involved in this story, but I think it's very striking that he burned down all their grain, because there was always a competition going on between the different nations in that day of whose god was greater. And the Philistines had the Israelis under oppression. No doubt they were saying, our god, Dagon, is the greatest god. And so Samson's like, oh yeah, you think your God's the greatest God? What about what Gideon did? What about all these judges? What about the vision that God gave my mom and dad? I'm gonna burn your grain God down, and you're gonna deserve it. You're gonna see that my God is greater, and you're gonna lose your grain. And he sends all these foxes right out in the middle and burns down all their fields. So I think there was something very symbolic and a statement being made here as well, not just to destroy their things, but again, to make a statement against their God, which is interesting to me as well, because remember when they catch Samson, we've got him, sir. Let him go. No, I'm just kidding. When they capture Samson later and throw him in prison, what do they make him do? He has to grind grain in the prison. No doubt making a point of the grain he had destroyed of theirs that we're reading about in chapter 15, but also I think saying, you know what? You thought your God was greater, but our God is greater. Of course, we know how it ends. God gets the upper hand at the end and all that, but it's interesting to watch this whole back and forth of how this happens. And Samson now again, bringing great destruction. And look at verse 6, it says, then the Philistines said, who has done this? And they answer, well, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion. So he gave his wife away. So the Philistines came up and they burned her and her father with fire. Now, this is radical. Look at this. It's like, okay, you gave Samson's wife away. He burned our fields. We're going to burn you. I mean, that is drastic and that's evil. And we're going to see that Samson strikes back even harder because of what they've done. But isn't it interesting? Because you remember the reason she lied and betrayed Samson the first time is so she wouldn't be burned with fire, so she wouldn't get in trouble. And now the very thing she feared has come upon her, and not only is she burned with fire, her family's burned with fire. What's the point of that? The point is simply this. Listen, don't try to cover up something that's wrong by something else that's wrong. It's better to stand on the truth. It's better to be honest up front and take the consequences of what's going to happen than to lie and let it build up and become worse down the road, because the very thing she feared is what came upon her. Look, if she had simply told Samson, Samson, they're coming after me. They're trying to get me to tell you. They're trying to do all this. Do you think Samson could have protected her? Now, she might not have known Samson's strength at this point, but when Samson told her the story, what does this riddle mean? Well, I killed a lion. You did what? I killed a lion. Well, like with what? We hadn't invented guns yet. What'd you use? You know, she didn't say that, but you get my point. My bare hands. You killed a lion with your bare hands? Yes. Wow. Well, you shouldn't be worried about these guys then. And I shouldn't be worried about. Let me tell you what they're doing. They're trying to get me to tell you the story. They want me to betray you and to do this so that you'll get that. Samson would have protected her. Samson would have protected her family. The point is, if you find yourself in a situation where the boss asks you, hey, do you know anything about this? And you know something about it and it's wrong, you need to tell them. But I may lose my job. Do you trust God or not? Do you trust God or not? Because if your boss finds out later you knew and you didn't tell him, you'll most certainly get fired. So the principle is just do what's right and face the consequences. God will work out the details. If she had done that, it probably would have spared her life. But instead, now they come up and they literally burn her and her family to death. And because it's so extreme and so radical, again, we're going to see that Samson does something very extreme and radical back for what they've done to deal with it. Look at this, what happens in verse 7. So Samson said to them, since you would do a thing like this, that is something so horrible and so radical, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that I will cease. And again, you know, when that's, it's not going to cease after that. He'll take revenge, they'll take revenge, it goes back and forth. But Samson, thinking this, says this, and notice verse 8, so he attacked them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and then he went down and he dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Edom. That was simply a term they used back then to mean he wiped them out. It's just a term to wipe them out. It's interesting, hip and thigh. What it means basically is the legs. With his legs, he wiped them out in a great slaughter. Now, some believe maybe it means cutting the enemy's legs off, you know, cutting off their strength and their ability to fight. You know, whatever it means, he wiped them out and did great damage on them. Again, doesn't tell us specifically what he did to them other than defeated them with a great slaughter. No doubt killed many of their men. Because of what they had done, and they deserve to be killed. And I say that unapologetically. And this is why we as believers have got to stand up and speak the truth. God needs some Samsons today. He needs some of us who are bold and who will be strong for him. And Samson was that. With all of his flaws and all of his weakness, he was at least strong enough to do that and brave enough to do that. And then notice once he does it, he's not stupid, that's for sure. He runs to the rock of Edom, and I don't think he was running because he was necessarily in fear. He knew that if he was going to be able to defend himself in any way and fight against these guys, he had to find a position of a stronghold. So he runs to these rocks. It says here in verse 8 here, he attacked them with great slaughter and ran down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Now, or Edom, Etam, whichever it is, we don't know where that is. They don't even know today for sure where that is. But it no doubt was a place of great protection by the rocks. Kind of like David running from Saul and hiding in the caves and all that went on there. It literally means the lair of the wild beast. So it would have been out in the wilderness somewhere. They would have had to find him there, and he would have had a good vantage point to be able to fight from that position, to throw down boulders at them or roll them down or to fight from that place. And again, using wisdom here and putting his defenses up to fight against the Philistines. God, again, is going to come upon Samson in power, just like he does throughout the story of Samson's life. And he's going to defeat something like 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey because of God's power and what God is doing through Samson. And the fact that Samson was willing to make a stand and to fight against the enemy and not to be afraid. And guys, my encouragement for us today, even as we come to the end of this, what we're looking at today, and we're not going to go any farther today, is God needs some Samsons. And well, also you ladies, some Samsonites. I don't mean luggage. I know that sounds funny, but he needs believers who will be bold and strong. Guys, I think we've stepped into a time and a day and age where we need to be bold enough to set the enemy's field on fire. Now, what do I mean by that? As I said at the beginning of the service, I'm not advocating violence. That's not what the Lord did. If the Lord wanted to advocate violence, he certainly could have done great damage when he was walking the earth. He wouldn't have had to go to the cross. If with a word in the garden, when he said, I am, the soldiers flew back by that power, he could have easily wiped everyone out and stopped the whole thing by force. That wasn't what it was about. As a matter of fact, Jesus said this, if I was now the king of this world, he said, my soldiers would fight. I'm not yet the king of this world. I will be. I'll come back and I'll rule and reign. But right now, I'm not in that position. When I come in my second coming, I will fight. But that's not where I am right now, and that's how we are to be following him. We fight, but not necessarily as believers going out and doing violent acts, so to speak. That's not what we're called to do. But guys, I do think we need to set some fields on fire, or our nation's going to be set on fire in destruction. And what do I mean by that? We need to be bold. You know, it's interesting I love about Samson. The nation had become so numb that the only way he could get anyone to respond was set a field on fire. Our nation has become so numb to its sin today that I believe the only way we're going to see any action in America today is setting some fields on fire. Mark, what's an example of that? Listen, abortion is not abortion. It's not a choice. It might be abortion, but it's more than a choice. It's murder. And it's murder in the most gruesome ways. Guys, we're pulling babies apart piece by piece through the process of abortion as they're sucked out of the womb. Oh, Mark, don't be so graphic. I think some fields need to be set on fire. I think sometimes graphic is the only thing that's going to stir our nation. People need to understand that with partial birth abortion, they turn the baby around and leave nothing but the baby's head in the mother. And then they kill the baby from there by plunging something into his head. And they say, why do you do that? Why did you vote for that? Why would you allow that to happen? Well, we want the safety of the mother. How much more danger could the mother be in after you've delivered the entire baby feet first and there's nothing but a head remaining to simply remove the baby and have it be alive? These aren't legitimate arguments. It is murder, and it's in the most graphic way these babies are being murdered. We need to set some fields on fire. We need to tell people that. Again, not rude, not mean, but honest. Again, the issue of same-sex marriage. Look, people are free to do what they want. God's not going to stop someone from sinning. There's going to be a judgment one day, but every one of us in this room, we can all leave and choose to sin if we want. But when the government passes laws that force us to do things against our conscience and that we don't agree with, when we're forced by law, we need to set some fields on fire. This is wrong. No, I won't do this marriage. I won't conduct this. Well, then you're going to lose your tax. I don't care about that. Then you're penalize you. I don't care about that. You're going to go to jail. I don't care. Whatever you have to do, you're going to have to do. Do I love them? I love them very much. They're sinners just like I am. I'm not judging them in that sense. We all need salvation. We all need Jesus and what he did on the cross. But I can't sit back and say that it's just an alternative lifestyle that they can force on me legally. If someone wants to live that way, they can live that way. And then they'll face the consequences on judgment day. But it's very different when the government comes in and passes laws and says, you have to do that. And that's when we have to speak up. And yes, is that going to set fields on fire? You better believe it. Islam. I'm going to hit all the hot button issues. I might as well. We're right in the middle of it, right? Listen, let me say something. The majority of Muslims, they don't want to kill us because they're what I call non-committed Muslims. They're moderate. They're not really committed to their Quran. They're churchgoers, as we would say in the Christian realm. They believe in their God. They believe in the Quran. They follow it. The ones they're calling radical, those are the ones that are truly committed. They're just committed. The Quran says the infidel either has to pay taxes or die. That's what their Bible teaches. Now, if you say that, you think that's going to set some fields on fire? It's going to set some fields on fire. But we need some Samsons who will say, look, we're not opposed to the Muslim people. We love them. Christ loved them. He died for them. And the majority of them do not want to kill us. But the ones that get serious about their faith, the ones that get serious about what the Quran teaches, you call them radicals, I call them committed. Those guys, if any group of them gets committed to their Bible, though we're committed to ours, we're all in big trouble in this nation. And we need to recognize that. Listen, the most radical thing that'll happen to you if a Christian gets on fire is they'll chase you down and love you. Maybe give you some money to help pay your rent. When they get on fire for their God, they blow you up and kill you. It's very different, very serious. So I'm not advocating that we round them all up. I'm not advocating anything. I'm saying we need to be honest and we need to speak the truth. We need to understand what we're understanding. We need to show our love for all these different groups, but we got to speak the truth about it and say, look, if they want to live the same-sex lifestyle, they're free to do that. God will deal with them. They're free to do that. I want them to know of the love of Jesus and they can be forgiven, but they're free to do that. But when you come over and say by law that I have to, now it's a whole different category. If you have those that say they believe in their God and they're not harming anyone, that's one thing. But when they get committed and serious and they begin to kill us, that's a whole different ballgame. And so we need to become those who are not afraid to set the fields on fire by speaking the truth. And I'm going to tell you this, guys, in the day and age in which we live, it's going to take boldness. This doesn't happen unless you're bold. And you've got to pray for boldness and pray for the love. There are a lot of issues today, guys, that our nation is facing. And I really believe that if we don't take some action, we're going to continue to become more and more numb, more and more dead to the society around us, and just go right along with it and just dissolve with the rest of the nation. Guys, we're the light of the world. We're the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, it's good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled by men. Translation, if we as the salt of the earth lose our testimony and become like everyone else around us and don't make a stand against things that are egregious and morally wrong, then we're no good for God anymore other than to be thrown out and useless. And if our whole church becomes that way across the nation, we're done. We've got to be the ones to preserve this rotting meat. We've got to be the ones that are the preservatives. We've got to be the ones that add the flavor. We've got to be the ones that are the light in the midst of the darkness. But I'm telling you, if you do it, yeah, you're going to have the Philistines coming after you. And they're going to call you all kinds of things. Bigot, narrow-minded, whatever, they're lacking love when it's all motivated by love. Listen, how many of us in this room don't want to see everyone go to heaven? We want to see everyone go to heaven, don't we? And yet we're accused of being haters or all these things. I think we're going to have to make up our mind, okay, they're going to accuse me, it's all right. I've still got to speak the truth. And whatever happens, happens. Here's the good news. We don't have to run to the rock of Edom or Etam and hide. We run to the rock, Jesus Christ. He's our stronghold. He's our protector. And he'll be the one that will be our defender. Let's pray for God to give us boldness, guys. As we finish today, let's ask God to give us boldness, not to be rude, not to be mean, but in love, speak the truth. It's the only hope for our nation because we're in big trouble if we don't hear more truth and start going a different direction as a nation.
Thank you for joining us today in this interesting passage of Judges. Here on Come to the Table, Pastor Mark Kirk is working his way through this Old Testament book, and there are lessons for us to learn from these people who lived during that time. Samson is one of the last judges mentioned in this book, and he had quite a tale. He was meant to live as a Nazarite, committing himself to the Lord and the Lord's things, but he had a straying eye that led him straight to all the wrong women. He was drawn toward Philistine women, who tricked him more than once, and ultimately led to his downfall. But did you know that God mentions Samson in the book of Hebrews when he refers to many people who had great faith? When you think of the faith heroes of the Bible, Samson is probably not going to make your short list, right? But in God's eyes, he sees things differently. That should be an encouragement for you today, as you may not see yourself as anything, but God sees you differently and uniquely. He recognizes strengths in you that you may not even be able to observe from your perspective. Keep these things in mind today as you go about the day, whether you feel purposeful in what you're doing or if you're wondering what in the world God is doing. He's there with you, and he is for you, excited to see your faith lived out. That's all for today's teaching, but we invite you to go to thewaymedia.net. where you can be directed to our church's service times. Just click on the Calvary Knoxville link. Once more, our website is thewaymedia.net. We look forward to you joining us again for Come to the Table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.